bienvenue to the Offside Rule Women's World Cup edition in association with Spotify. Joining me in the studio once again, a neutral to stop us getting overexcited, it's Wales international and Watford striker Helen Ward. Hi, Helen.
Hello.
And a real treat alongside Helen, formerly of Chelsea, Liverpool and Boston Breakers, a manager who's now overseeing the revolution at West Ham Women. It's Matt Beard. Hi, Matt.
Hi.
Well, great to reunite you both. Matt was your manager at Chelsea, Helen, and also a guest at your wedding. I hope his dancing was up to scratch.
I can't say I can remember the dancing part of it. It was quite late in the day.
So you've known each other for a while, and actually, Matt, it was your decision to bring Helen to Chelsea.
Yeah. Helen's obviously a great player, and I loved working with her.
Well, let's hope that carries on today and it doesn't all end disastrously. Matt, what have you made of the World Cup so far?
I think it's been fascinating. It was interesting watching the Australia game today against Italy. You know, Australia's a team that I know very well from my time in America with a lot of Australian players in the NWSL. I was expecting big things from them, but I was really disappointed with them today and really impressed with Italy. But so far, I think you can see over the last 4 years how all the teams have progressed and the games are close now. And there was been a few shocks on the cards, but some of the better teams have got over the line in the latter stages of the games. But so far, so good.
And France, they look very enticing, don't they?
Yeah, I was really impressed with France because Korea are a very good side. You know, they made it look really, really easy. But I think the strength and depth that they've got, power, pace, height, they've got everything. And it's going to be, I think they're obviously going to be there and thereabouts in the tournament.
Well, let's get on to business, the one everyone's been building up to as England and Scotland came to play. England 2-1 winners, a strong first half from them with Nikita Paris and her first World Cup goal, and then Ellen White with another one to follow.
Taken with unerring accuracy, England lead. We're here to White, and she's bent in number two for England.
But Scotland came back into play later on in the second half to make it a tense end to the game.
Chelsea bringing Emerson, she's got also a big chance for Scotland, and she's put it away, and they're back in the game.
Matt, did England dictate this one though from the start?
I think they had a nervy start. First 10, 15 minutes, I thought Scotland come out and started well. I think the penalty decision changed the game a little bit. Scotland didn't really recover from that, and then England were quite comfortable beyond that. So I think they'll be pleased with the last half an hour of the first half. And they fully deserve to go in, you know, 2-0 at half-time.
Helen, were England as good, better or not as good as you expected?
Somewhere in between all of that, I think. As Matt said, they started a bit sluggish, gave the ball away too much, which probably was a theme throughout the game. They did have spells where they played it around nicely, and that sort of football will trouble most teams in the competition, but they have to do it more often. I think too often they got a bit too lackadaisical on the ball, allowed Scotland to pinch it back, and then with the players they've got, they could have caused a few more problems. But I think there's a lot for them to build on, but they can get better for sure.
Well, not since 1995 have England won an opening game in the group stage, so there's some encouragement to be had there. After the game, though, Matt, Alex Scott said they looked tired. She questioned the Winter League, something you know incredibly well, of course, when you're planning your sides and looking at your season. Would you agree with her comment? Is there any reflection there?
To me, they didn't look tired. They gave the ball away, especially in the second half a lot, which meant they had a lot of recovery runs to make. You know, Phil Neville's post-match comments, he was unhappy with the way they didn't keep the ball in the second half. And if you're giving the ball away and you've got 30, 40 yards worth of recovery runs to make, it's going to fatigue you. They started the game well. They kept the ball well. And I feel the fitness levels weren't the issue. It was the ball retention and maybe some of their reaction to lost possession as well. It was quite lazy.
Helen, the goal scorer is Nikita Paris. Some great link-up play with Lucy Bronze. She, of course, converted the pen that was awarded after VAR came into play. Again, let's just talk about Nikita before we pick up on that VAR with you, Matt. What were your impressions of this young player who certainly looks pretty fearless out there?
Yeah, she's had a fantastic season. Obviously, she's broken the WSL scoring record this year. She's still 25, I think. So, obviously, she's not going to be in the WSL next season, but she's going to continue to score goals. She looks very confident. And I think down that right-hand side in the first half, her and Lucy Bronze gave Nicola Doherty a torrid time. She really did struggle to deal with the pair of them. But I did actually have to check that she hadn't gone off in the second half because they nullified that threat a little bit more and they couldn't get Nikita into the game. And I think when she stopped playing, the team didn't look as good. They didn't look as much of a threat. So credit to Scotland. They looked at where they needed to make changes, and Shelley Kerr's done that. She's brought on the young girl from Manchester United, Smith. She's come on. Lisa Evans' positioning was tweaked slightly, and that made it a lot more difficult to break down that side for England. So I think looking beyond this game, other teams may well look at that from an English perspective and see Paris as such a big threat that needs to be nullified, and it's going to be difficult then for them to try and get her into a game different way.
And Matt, VAR playing its part in the first goal for England to get them off and running, Frank Herbert's cross hitting Nicola Doherty's arm. Have we seen too much VAR? It almost feels as if we're stopping every 5 minutes for it. And I suppose it's frustrating for us to watch. It must be frustrating for the players. But ultimately, it's driving some key decisions behind these games.
It definitely is. I mean, with the new law, it's a penalty. Her arm was out. It's hit her arm. It's changed the direction of the ball. So it's a penalty, you know. If I was Shelley Kerr, I'd be frustrated that it was given, but unfortunately, you know, you've got the video referees that get the opportunity to look at it, watch it back, different angles, and, you know, it was a penalty.
Moving on from VAR, we've talked about Nikita Paris, Ellen White with the second goal. What makes her so special for this England side?
When I saw the starting lineup and I looked at Scotland's back four and midfield three and looked at England's midfield three and front three, I knew that England were causing problems because Ellen's biggest strength is stretching defences. She's a very good finisher and gets in good positions. I was disappointed with the amount of time she was caught offside today. I think that was quite sloppy, and, you know, one was an offside goal and the other one led to the third goal where she doesn't need to be offside. So I think from an England perspective, she and England need to look at that. But she's such a good player. She has great work rate and energy, and she sets the tempo, especially first half. Some of the closing down and putting Scotland under pressure, it set the tempo for England in the first half especially.
Who else impressed you from this England side? We've mentioned Alex Greenwood when we were watching the game earlier. Who else stood out for you?
I was impressed with, obviously, Alex that we spoke about, especially first half, the way that she used the ball. Lucy Bronze was obviously outstanding first half, you know, causing problems with underlapping, overlapping. And of course, I felt the best player for England was Nikita Paris, even though Scotland nullified her in the second half. You know, she caused a lot of problems in the first half, and I think she probably rightly deserves the Player of the Match award.
Matt, Beth Mead and Kira Walsh both making their first appearance at a World Cup for England in the starting lineup. What are your takeaways from those two players?
Well, I felt Beth done well. I think she got in good positions in between the lines. Especially the way Scotland defended, they dropped so deep and there was a lot of space between the midfield players and the back four. Kira, we didn't really see much of, to be perfectly honest with you. I mean, she, you know, I know firsthand, you know, she was outstanding in the FA Cup final. She's, you know, she can start a lot of the play, dictate a lot of the play. But I felt because Scotland was so deep, the game sort of just passed her by a little bit today. So I'm sure there's going to be more to come from her as the tournament goes.
Scotland left a lot of space for England, didn't they? They lack pace against this England side. Just give us your take on whether they didn't approach the game in the right way. Can they not match England's pace and England's skill? What are the issues there?
I think first half, I think England tactically were better than Scotland. I think if you look at Doherty, the left back, you know, getting tight, getting turned. I think there was a sequence with Lucy and Lucy Bronze and Nikita Paris where, you know, two Scotland players ended up falling over three times and England getting the cross in. If it wasn't for the Scotland goalkeeper, the game would have been out of sight by half time. I think tactically, Shelley got it right second half, and I think, you know, maybe that's where England needed to change it up a little bit because we couldn't get down the right hand side. So maybe Nikita would have been better off going out to the other side because Lisa was asked to drop a little bit deeper. The fullback was asked to stay and they stopped the ball getting in them spaces. But I think Scotland can take a lot of heart from the last 15, 20 minutes and build from that. You know, what you've got to remember is, you know, I think this is Kim Little's first major tournament, Jem Beattie's first major tournament. They both missed out on the Euros, and Scotland have got some very, very good players in their team. And I'm sure as the tournament goes, they'll get a little bit more confident and they can take confidence from that period at the end of the game.
Claire Emsley with that goal for Scotland. Erin Cuthbert, Helen, for you, how did she perform today?
I thought she did exceptionally well. She looked like the player that everybody's been talking about. She had to feed off scraps a little bit in the first half, but she, for someone who's quite small, she puts herself about. She, you know, she goes toe-to-toe with Millie Bright, and Millie Bright ends up on the floor and ending up having to come off. And that doesn't happen often with Millie. She's very strong. So I think she's got a lot to her game. She's skillful, she's quick, she's powerful. She needed a little bit more support than she got today. But I thought her and Caroline Weir were probably the standout players for Scotland. Caroline Weir made a lot of interceptions, put in some good tackles, which I wouldn't necessarily know her for. She's obviously known for a wonderful left foot and she can pick out a pass, you know, through any defence. And I thought those two in particular stood out.
OK, well, let's take a break here in the studio and head over to Rich Laverty, who is in Nice for the game. Rich, first things first, watching back home here in the UK, there was a lack of fans, a game that I thought was nearly sold out or that tickets were hard to come by. But there appeared to be a lot of empty seats in that stadium.
Yeah, it's a strange one. Apparently the FA said the games were sold out, but FIFA yesterday said about 16,000 had been sold. So I don't know if there were some wires crossed somewhere, but it was much more closer to what FIFA said. Obviously, when there's so many tickets that are cheap, it's easy for people not to show up. So I think just over 13,000 was what it looked like at the start, and that's what it came to. So yeah, it was a lot closer to FIFA's projections yesterday. But yeah, shame to see so much of the stadium empty. But Phil was very praiseworthy of the England fans after the match, and the Scotland fans made very good noise as well throughout. So it was still a good atmosphere from within the stadium.
And as a journo, you obviously spend days building up to this game, and there are pre-match press conferences, there are interviews, and you do, you know, match day minus two, match day minus one, and it all builds up to this point. But the moment, for me anyway, when I'm at a big tournament, it starts to get a bit nervy is when the team sheets come out, when we know who's playing. What were your instant reactions when you saw both sides, Rich, how they were lined up?
I think England were very much as expected. I think there were a few surprises in Scotland's team, particularly up front. Jane Ross didn't play. She didn't even come on. So I don't know whether she wasn't fit. It was strange, you know, even with 5 minutes to go, that Scotland didn't throw her on. I think England were very much as we expected. You know, if we could have put a team together with the players that were fit, I think that was certainly the one that most people would have gone with. And it works. You know, first half England were excellent. So second half, they looked a little bit leggy. It was very humid within the stadium, which wouldn't have been noticeable at home. The temperatures were incredible given the time of the evening. So I don't think it was a surprise in how fast they went out of the blocks in the first half, that there was a bit of a drop-off and Scotland came back into it. But they got through it. And 3 points is all that matters at this stage, and it's a great start.
Journalist Rich Laverty there speaking to us just after the game in Nice. When we were watching the match, Matt and Helen, we talked about the need for a holding midfielder, particularly when you've got no Jordan Nobbs in that team. And interesting that Farrah Williams wasn't taken with a view for that role as well, Matt.
Yeah, look, I work with Farrah. She's world class, especially with Jordan being injured. You know, Farrah can play in the holding midfield role. She's done that for me at Liverpool for 3 years, which she's been playing for Reading in the 10. And I just think with her experience as well, the way, especially the second half went, for her to come off the bench and maybe dictate play and keep the ball for us, I think she's going to be a bit of a big miss for us out there with her not being there.
Fran Kirby today, hard to kind of see her in that position really, isn't it? It's not really where she's suited. So how does Phil handle incorporating Fran Kirby in that side and trying to get the best out of her? Because she had another frustrating game today, really, for me.
She did. She didn't seem to get on the ball enough. And when she did, she didn't look comfortable in possession where she was. Whether she was too crowded out, I don't know.
Is she still too rusty? I mean, she's you know, had injury problems.
Yeah, she's had a very stop-start season, hasn't she? She's not had really a flow of games. And I think even leading into the tournament with the way Phil's changed his side round, she's not had a consistent run of games for a long time now, and maybe that plays a part. I prefer her to be in a more advanced position, maybe have more of a free role across that front line again, like we were saying about the movement. Just let her find pockets, whether it's out wide in the channels, right up top. She's very good at finding those spaces and getting onto the back line, but I just felt she didn't get the ball in the right areas of the pitch today. And whether that's down to her rustiness or the players just not being able to find her, I'm not sure. But she's a great player, and I'm sure she's going to turn it on at some point in the next couple of games. And hopefully Phil gives her the opportunity to do that, because she can be a match winner. It's just trying to find a solution that suits her best, but without being detrimental to the rest of the team.
A couple of quick final points. Helen, for you, what does Scotland take away from this game?
I think they take their second half performance, probably the last half an hour in particular, where they stepped their game up quite considerably. They got into better areas. there are plenty of positives. And as I said before, they're coming up against a very strong England side, and they're not third in the world for no reason. So Scotland have to remember that yes, okay, it is England and they do know a lot of their players, but it is still a very good side.
Matt, do England look like a World Cup winning side?
Not yet. We've definitely got the potential. I think if you look at, as I say, that 30-minute period in the first half, you know, we showed how good we can be. We've said that they'll be disappointed with the second half performance, and I go back to the France performance from the first whistle to the last whistle. It was consistent and they were outstanding. And I think, you know, from our side of things, we have to be better consistently for the 90 minutes. And I feel that would probably be the biggest disappointment from today. But the most important thing was the 3 points. We've started that way, so we can really move on.
All right, well, joining us from Nice after the game, our very own Lindsay Hooper. Lindsay, first things first, how's that French coming along?
No better. petit pois.
De rien.
I'm trying, though. I am trying. Every time I leave a restaurant or anywhere, it's like, merci, au revoir. So I've definitely got that down to a fine art now.
As long as you know that Monge 2 doesn't mean me too, then you're absolutely fine, Hoops, I think. Just carry
that
on.
That it's just like Del Boy and Rodney, Monge 2.
Let's talk about the game. We've spoken about Ellen White and the threat from Nikita Paris, how that looks, you know, strong and encouraging for England, particularly when we were talking about nailed on goals so much before this game and where they were going to come from. Defensively, we stacked up okay as well. Possible injury concern for Millie Bright. But who was your unsung hero, Lindsay?
Well, it's not very often that I disagree with Matt Beard, but I'm going to go completely against something that he said to you, which was to do with Kira Walsh, because I thought she was outstanding for this match. Played a first full 90 minutes in a senior tournament, and I thought she put hardly a foot wrong. I thought she looked very composed on the ball. She was picking out some lovely little passes and often getting her foot stuck in, you know, turning over play in midfield, which is what you need. She reminded me very much of Jade Moore, actually, who, of course, was on the bench. So I think that they, like for like, can do a similar job. But I was really, really impressed by her performance. And I was really shocked to hear Matt say that he perhaps didn't think she did so much.
And the England fans, what was their reaction to this? We've had so much build-up, haven't we, to this game. But it was quite nervy towards the end of the second half after Scotland managed to pull one back.
Yeah, nervy at the beginning. I thought the first opening 10 minutes, those opening exchanges, you could tell this was the start of a World Cup tournament. So much at stake, so much expectation on one side, so much joy to be here. But of course, everything piled at England on the other. And I really thought that opening 10 minutes until the penalty decision was actually exposing really some of those nerves that were on show. But I think Argentina now will be a great settling game for them in the middle, because as opposition, they're not going to be, I don't think, as tough as Scotland. I don't think it's going to be going home time just yet for Scotland fans. And there've been plenty of them. I was really, really taken by the number that turned up today. Equal in voice, I thought, to the England support. They're obviously enjoying their first World Cup.
We're yet to find any established chance, Hoops. So we need to keep you on watch for England chance.
Watch from now on.
Yes,
yeah.
Okay, yes, please do. So you're staying in Nice, and I gather quite an unusual guest in your hotel in the form of Scotland's First Minister.
Yeah, so you think when they would have booked the hotel, they might not have opted for the England hotel. But they did. So, yes, Nicola Sturgeon was staying in the hotel, obviously here to support Scotland. And credit to her, she seems to do this a lot. She goes and supports the national teams. I'm sure she went and had a word with the players as well prior to kickoff. We've seen quite a few different people coming out here. So got eyes on Faye White as well prior to the match. Former England captain had been invited out here. Julie Fleeting from Scotland as well, here with her family and children. And they seem so excited. I actually was in a lift with them and they were so excited about the match. So to have seen a first goal as a former Scotland player at a World Cup, you know, that was the game for her to come to see that, because history was made.
Well, you're my number one person to be stuck in a lift with, Hoops. Thank you so much for that bit of insight. And we will catch up with you soon.
Yes, I'm off to Le Havre tomorrow.
Ooh, enjoy. Well, it's not just Lindsay we're hearing from in Nice. We've also got Emma Dodds lined up on Scotland, giving us her take on the game. Emma, welcome along. Just give us the takeaway from your perspective, really, on that Scotland performance.
Yeah, I mean, I think the overall emotion after that result is one of extreme pride as to where Scotland have come from and where they are now. There's obvious disappointment. Nobody likes to lose a football match. But when you put everything into context, our first ever World Cup match, the occasion that it was against England, and obviously the world rankings as to where we currently sit, to where England currently sit. You know, it's not a surprise result, but I genuinely did think before we came into this match that we had a chance of at least getting a point, if not all three. So I think, actually, it's disappointing, but when...
I hope you're rubbing it into Emma Dodd.
Oh, here's Lindsay Hooper. The people that you meet in the TV compound.
Heckler, no. Lindsay Hooper. I don't know.
I know. I had to sit next to her during the game with it quipping away. Revenge is a dish best served cold. I'm determined that it will happen. But no, as I say, in all seriousness, you know, the rankings, everything that you put into this entire match and the occasion, I think Scotland handled themselves brilliantly. I really do. And I think the second half performance has given us so many positives to take into the next two matches in this Group D at the World Cup.
Yeah.
So, yeah, disappointed with the result, but overall, not so disappointed with the actual performance when you look at the entire 90 minutes.
What did Shelley Kerr have to say afterwards?
Yeah, I mean, it was very similar. I think the general consensus from the Scotland camp was they maybe gave England a little bit too much respect in the first half. Shelley said, you know, overall, with the occasion, there are definitely positives to take into the next few games. And actually, we have to put things into context. We are 20th in the world. We're playing against the side who's come here to win the World Cup, who's third. But, as I say, before the match, everybody in the Scotland camp did expect to be able to get a result. But I think on the balance of play overall tonight, that England winning and taking all 3 points definitely wasn't an unfair result.
Emma Dodds, thank you very much. I'm going to leave you to go and get revenge over Lindsay Hooper. I can give you a bit of insight. She hates mosquitoes and unvarnished wood. So,
unvarnished wood, yes. That's it. I'm going round to the hotel with unvarnished wood tonight.
Yes.
We'll still get out of this group, so we might still meet again. I'm being defiant.
Fantastic. Lovely to speak to you, Emma. Thanks so much.
Thanks very much.
Thanks very much to broadcaster Emma Dodds there on Scotland. Will England face Argentina next, with Scotland against Japan? We'll preview Argentina-Japan later, but next we're looking at the rest of the day's action.
Bon dia, Kate and co. This is producer Ben reminding you not to forget that the Nations League is also happening, and your Totally Football team is out in Porto covering every kick. We'll be back on Sunday night to see whether Portugal or the Netherlands will walk away with international football's newest trophy, and whether England can pip the Swiss for that prestigious third place finish. The only place you can hear us is on Spotify, so search for the Totally Nations League show and follow us to subscribe. Like this show you're listening to, it's totally free. You don't need a premium account or anything like that. We're also posting photos, clips and pay-per-views while we're out here in Portugal, so head to @thetotallyshow on Twitter for more.
Well, in the first match of the day, Italy will be happy with this one, beating Australia in the last minute of our first tournament upset. We know Italy are capable of goals. A further two went in the back of the net but were disallowed after VAR review. Could Italy then be a real prospect at this tournament, Matt? How do you fancy them?
It's a great start for them, because I fancied Australia before the tournament to go far. So,
what about the prospect of them getting out of the group? Because I think we were all a bit unsure about how they were going to do in this tournament, and this is a better start, I think, for me than I expected.
Yeah, no, definitely. No one expected them to beat Australia today. 3 points gives them a great chance now to get out of the group, whether it's first, second or one of the best, you know, third place teams. So I feel with the result they've got today, they're in pole position to get out of the group.
You told me earlier that the ref ruined the game. Just elaborate on that.
I wouldn't say she ruined the game. I think it's been all tournament. There's been so many times where if just let it go a second or 2 seconds just to see what happens. It was funny because the second goal, there was a foul given, and Italy had actually broke the line and could drive at Australia. And Australia's two centre-backs are very slow, but she pulled up for a free kick, and they ended up, from that free kick, winning another free kick where the goal come from. So obviously she proved me wrong there, but I just think it's been a bit whistle-happy at times. You know, there's been decisions that you could just let go, see what develops. You can always go back to it if nothing comes from it. And I think that's been a big frustration of mine so far. But, you know, you don't know what directives they've been given from obviously FIFA. So it worked in Italy's favour today with the decision. But it has been frustrating. And it's not just been this game. It's been a lot of the games.
All right, well, Sam Kerr getting the first goal there, a penalty which was saved by the Italy keeper. And then Sam Kerr knocked in off the rebound. Two goals for Barbara Bonasea, who, as a commentator, must be a dream because she's Bonasea.
Bonasea di testa! Sul più bello! Facciamo gol! Ancora con lei! Barbara Bonasea! 2-1 per l'Italia!
Helen, I know you've played Italy. They won on a set piece today, something that you'd already marked them out for.
Yeah, we've played them twice in just over a year. We played them in Cyprus the season before this one and recently in a very cold game in January where it was snowing and quite difficult conditions. But we picked up from the analysis we did of both our games against them and ones they've played in before where they have quite a high priority on set plays, attacking ones, where they make very clever movements. They try and disrupt players in the wall. Obviously, there's now the rule change with how close you can be to a wall now, but they can still do what they do, which is where they have almost a second wall to distract the goalkeeper. They then run, distract the defenders, and then it gives lots of pockets of space open up for the players running into the area. But they're a very good side apart from set plays. They obviously use that to their advantage, but I really like Manuela Giuliano. She dictates play. She is very clever. She's, again, another small player in stature, but really, really tidy on the ball. And from seeing her play up close, I can really appreciate how effective she is. And I think Italy have got a chance to cause more upsets along the way.
Well, working for Australia's Optus Sport broadcaster Jules Breets watched this one. Jules, what was the reaction like over there?
Well, it was a real disappointment, really, Kate, because obviously the Matildas started the game so well, going in front and going in 1-0 up at half-time was a real good start for the Matildas. And obviously there'd been so much build-up coming into the match as well. They were genuine contenders, you know, go all the way in this tournament and get maybe to the final, potentially even win the competition. So to actually lose their first game against Italy, who are a side that not many people really fancied in this tournament. You know, this is their first World Cup in 20 years. I don't think there were many people that knew a lot about this Italy side. So, in a way, perhaps everyone's underestimated Italy because they did actually surprise the Matildas today.
What about Sam Kerr?
Well, Sam Kerr led the line today and she's captain in the World Cup for the very first time in her career. And I think the thing with Sammy is, obviously, she's such a fantastic player and there's been a lot of pressure on her to deliver. Obviously, getting an early goal kind of took the pressure off her a little bit, which was good, but obviously it wasn't a great penalty. But then after that, she didn't really have that many chances, if we're being completely honest. In terms of her leadership, the comments around the kind of punditry team that I've been working with were that they're not very convinced that she maybe is the right leader, and perhaps that's something that Matildas are missing. They're missing that out-and-out leader we saw from Italy today. Their captain was outstanding on the pitch day in terms of leading the girls and getting them back into the game after going 1-0 down. And I think the girls that I've been speaking to today from the Matildas really were saying that perhaps they're missing a bit of a leader.
Thanks very much to Jules Breets. Matt, listening to what Jules has said there about Sam Kerr and the reaction over in Australia, has that surprised you? Quite strong, you know, critical, really.
There's high expectations of this team. Sam's a world-class player. From my experiences in America of coaching against Sam, you know, she can be very individual with regards to her play. But, you know, she scores goals and she's an icon over in Australia. If you look at the game and the way the game went, you know, Alana Kennedy and Pokinghorn for Australia, two very slow centre-backs. And you look a lot of the play, they had a high line. There was a lot of space in behind and it caused them a lot of problems. So maybe tactically they got their game plan wrong. And obviously the winning goal was a mistake by the goalkeeper. She stays where the ball gets headed in. It goes into her arm. So they'll be frustrated the way that they lost the game. But Italy fully deserved it. You know, if that would have been 3 or 4-1, that would have been a fair reflection, you know, on the way the game panned out today.
Brazil next for Australia, and they're going to need to step up their game after that one, aren't they? On to the next game of the day. Brazil running out 3-0 winners against Jamaica, and it was a case of who needs Marta, because there was a hat-trick, the first one of these World Cup finals from Cristiane. Great movement from the 34-year-old Brazilian, Helen, the oldest player to score a hat-trick at the World Cup finals. How much was skill, and how much was the Jamaican defence just been a bit too kind?
I don't like to take too much away from the forward. I think I'm glad that she's 34. It gives me a bit of hope. But no, three very different goals. The movement was exceptional. And I think a lot of defences would struggle with that. The header for the first goal was top class, really fizzed it into the far post, really clever application of that header. I think the second one was predatory instinct, finishing from a very tight angle. And then obviously a wonderful free kick to finish with. Had a lot of pace and power, hit the bar and went in. Maybe could question the goalkeeper on that one slightly because it was her side. But like I said, I don't like to take too much away from a player that scored three goals in a World Cup. It's a fantastic achievement. And what a way for her to start the World Cup. She's going to go on and be full of confidence now.
Absolutely, Matt. So we're all looking forward to seeing Jamaica. So a disappointing result for them. What went wrong for them today?
I think, obviously, you've just got to look at the three goals. The header and the free kick for me were, you know, were world-class finishes. Again, you don't know whether being their first major tournament, first game, you know, whether the occasion was too much for them. You know, if you look at the statistics, you know, they've had a lot of shots today. But as I say, from Jamaica's point of view, they'll be disappointed with the scoreline, but they can take a lot of heart from the game and the fight that they showed in it.
They are the lowest ranked side, but their goalkeeper, I like the look of, even though three goals went in, could have been a lot more. She did save a penalty. Sydney Schneider, 19, plays college football over in the US. So for a 19-year-old goalkeeper up against Brazil at the World Cup, I'd say fair play to her, because that's a pretty tough test, isn't it?
It is, and when you're coming up against a side with such attacking power that Brazil have got, as any goalkeeper, you know you're going to be busy, and there's only so many shots you can keep out. As you said, she's only 19. It's a big, big stage, and there's a lot of hype around this World Cup, so there's a lot of pressure from not only within your own team, but from the outside now to perform. But that, you know, she'll be pleased with how she's done overall, I think. Like I said, maybe the free kick she might be a little bit disappointed with, but she's had a good game, and what an experience to have as a 19-year-old and playing in your first major tournament is fantastic for her.
Well, that's our first weekend at this Women's World Cup 2019 wrapped up. Next, it's Monday's action. Listening to the Offside Rule Women's World Cup edition with myself, Kate Borsay, Matt Beard and Helen Ward, old mates. Let's talk about match day 4 in Group E, kicking off, later kickoff, 8 p.m. UK time, Canada versus Cameroon. Well, this should be easy going for Canada on paper. They've had a change of manager since the last World Cup. A lot of the key players from that side still there. Cameroon, well, they were a surprise package in Canada 4 years ago as the only African team to make it to the knockouts. Let's talk about Canada first, though. A lot of buzz around that side surrounds Christine Sinclair, a very clever player and on her way to becoming the greatest goal scorer in international football history. She's 4 goals shy, Helen, of becoming the all-time leader, man or woman.
That is incredible, isn't it? I mean, 181 goals, I think she's on, which is a phenomenal achievement for any player. And she's sure to go on and break that record without any trouble, possibly during this tournament.
What's her secret, Matt? Christine, because I know you're a big fan of her as well.
She's a great finisher, obviously, because she scored 181 goals. No, but what I mean is that I've seen it firsthand. You know, I remember at Boston, we lost 1-0. Portland had one shot on target and it fell to her and she scored. But just her movement, she's such a clever player. Anyone that watches the game, if you're a centre forward, just watch her movement. She gets in good positions. She gets herself in good goal scoring positions. But the thing with her as well is she's very unselfish. You know, she's just a world-class player. And without a shadow of a doubt, she's going to break that record, whether it's in this World Cup or whether it's beyond that. She'll continue to play until she does anyway.
And Helen, she carries that mantle of being the most recognised player over in Canada really well, very, very coolly. When Lindsay and I were over there for the Women's World Cup in 2015, you know, she was on every billboard. She was the talisman. She was the one everyone knew. But she seems to carry that responsibility with ease.
She does. But I think she's probably the first to appreciate those that are around her and behind her in the team. They're built on a very solid foundation, and that allows her to go up the other end and score goal after goal. She's a mature player. She's got that air of confidence about her. I mean, who wouldn't? If you scored 180 goals for your country, you're going to have that confidence. But Canada are a good side. They're very solid. They keep a lot of clean sheets. And as I said, if you've got Sinclair on the pitch, you know you're in with a chance of winning games, if not getting a point. So, yeah, she carries it very well. But as I said, if you've got that much quality and that much class, then it's probably not too difficult for her.
Matt, just quickly, you had Adriana Leon at Boston Breakers. You brought her over for West Ham. Is she going to start tomorrow?
Well, she seems to come off the bench for Canada, and she always comes off the bench and scores. So I think Ken FC's a more of an impact player. They've changed their system of play over the last year or so. I think Adriana probably will be coming off the bench and have be the impact that she always has for them.
Jessie Fleming as well, we were talking about Canada earlier, someone who stands out for you.
Yeah, fantastic young player. Wouldn't surprise me if she does what Mallory Pugh done and comes out of college and goes professional. She's got all the tools to be world class, and I know she's very highly thought of in Canada.
Well, Harjit Johal, writer for The Equaliser, is following Canada in France, and she's been watching the side in training. Speaking to producer Abby, she brings us the latest.
Canada is looking great. They have a lot of confidence. They've just been waiting to get the game underway against Cameroon. They had a training camp in San Sebastian. They came to Montpellier. They've been battling against each other in training, and you know, they're kind of getting sick and tired of training against each other. They want a real opponent. They want to feel the fans and the stadium and the pitch and kind of get in and soak in the atmosphere. So it's match day against Cameroon. They're pumped. They want to get out there and show the world what they have to offer.
Tell us about some of the players who are going under the radar, because we know about Christine Sinclair. Who else are going to be the headline makers for the Canadian team?
It's more about who can assist Christine, who can kind of get in there, the secondary scoring and chip in. You've got Janine Becky, Michelle Prince, if Canada starts in the 4-3-3. You've got the maestro, Jessie Fleming, in the midfielder. She's playing a lot of strings there. And obviously, Sophie Schmidt's been in the program for quite a long time, so she's there. And Desiree Scott, the destroyer in defense. So it's a lot more depth for Canada, a lot more players who are able to contribute. So it's not just Christine Sinclair. You've got fullbacks Ashley Lawrence, Alicia Chapman. So there's a lot of attacking options for Canada where maybe that wasn't possible a few World Cups ago.
They're first up against Cameroon. You've been at the presser today. What can we expect from this African side?
I was quite surprised. They seem to have a lot of confidence and maybe a little bit of swagger, which kind of shocked me. So we'll see what they bring. They were in the 2015 World Cup and they surprised a lot of teams. I spoke to Gail and Group Amit, who had the hat trick last year. And, you know, she's excited to get going and they're excited to show the world what they can do because, you know, they're 46th ranked. Maybe they don't have all the accolades and this tournament comes around every 4 years. And other than that, we don't really hear much from Cameroon. So they want to show that, they, you know, they can hang with the big teams and they can use their explosive speed to get in behind Canada and cause some problems. So we're going to see if they're all talk or if they can actually back it up.
Thanks very much to Harjit there. Let's go straight on to Argentina, Japan, sharing the group D berths with England and Scotland, of course. Argentina, Japan, it's important that we keep a keen eye on this one. Japan looked far from the force that they turn up to major tournaments with anyway at the She Believes Cup this year, roundly beaten by England. But they always come a bit under the radar and then suddenly seem to pull it out of the bag in these big tournaments. Don't forget they disposed of England last time out, didn't they, to make the final, losing to USA. They've had a bit of a clean out, known for their technicality, Matt, but how are they going to match up to the top teams this time?
It's going to be interesting because tactically and technically they're very good. Positional play is a big part of how they play and their philosophy. They're going for a big transitional period as a team. So I just wonder whether the power and the pace of the teams like America, France, you know, looking at England today, whether that would be too much for them as the tournament goes. But one thing that you know you're going to get, they're going to be very organised, they're going to create chances, they're going to be difficult to play against, and they'll possess the ball. So it's going to be interesting to see how they do in this tournament.
How do Argentina approach this game? Only 9 of their players are professional, Helen. They are making strides over there in the country, though, to raise their levels to meet the rest of what's happening in world football in terms of increasing skill and the amount of time that players are spending in training as well. How do they approach it, though?
They're going to have to be very disciplined. They're going to have to close up spaces. Japan love nothing more than spaces to pick teams off. They're going to pass until they create something, and they'll move players all over the pitch, try and get their opposition out of shape. So it's important for Argentina not to allow them to do that. I should imagine balls out wide maybe where they want to force them, because of course Japan aren't going to have too much in terms of height and physicality in central areas. So if they can force them into trying to play longer balls or play crosses into the box, that might be where they might get some joy. They have one player in Benini who Matt was telling me that she's a good outlet for them, but it's whether they can get enough of the ball for her to see it higher up the pitch and cause problems. It's going to be a difficult one for Argentina. They're record in the World Cup's not too great so far. But the game's growing all over the world, and you know, teams like Argentina, they're trying their best to get up to those standards, and maybe this is the sort of platform they need to go out and show people that this is what we can do, help us out, and we can do even more. So I'm hoping that they'll step up and give Japan a good game.
Well, those two matches tomorrow, let's get some predictions on them. Matt Beard, let's go to you. Canada versus Cameroon.
Canada win.
Argentina, Japan.
Japan.
All over. It's too easy, this one. Helen, I'm guessing it may be the same for you.
Yeah, I do think it'll be the same. Maybe a little bit closer than some expect in both games, but I do expect both Canada and Japan to come through unscathed.
Well, thank you both very much for joining us. It's been a pleasure to have you here in the studio. We can keep up to date with everything Offside Rule by searching at Offside Rule Pod on social media. Head to our website for match reports, our column with Carly Telford, and much, much more from France. OffsideRulePodcast.com. We'll be back tomorrow following Canada versus Cameroon and Argentina up against Japan. Bye for now.
The Offside Rule Women's World Cup Edition is a Muddy Knees Media production in association with Spotify.